Good to be with you this morning. I understand there's some new people here, and I'll let Mike get that figured out. Okay, so for those that don't know who we are, my name is Jerry, and here's the rest of the family. You may have seen them wandering around. My wife, Sarah, and our three kids that are getting taller than us pretty soon here. Ishael is already 15, going on 17, and Tirza is about to pass her up. She's 13 or 14, one of the two. In Turkish, we count them different, the ages. So if you ask them their age, they might tell you something different. So I'm not trying to deceive anyone here. And my son, he would like to be 12, but he's only 10, I think. Okay, so he's on 11, I think, somewhere in there. At any rate, so we've been serving the Lord for many years, have happy memories of Yakima, and are always happy to come back. It does feel the closest to home as it can get on this part of eternity, especially since our home is, you know, people ask us, where are you from? And it's always a question that kind of causes us to stop and think and go, okay, where do we go with this? So in Turkish, I have a great answer, because in Turkish, the question is nerelisin, which means where, not necessarily where are you from, but where do you belong? And so I always say, I'm cennetli, I belong to heaven. And they kind of taken aback by that. And I says, yeah, that's where I belong. That's where I'm going. How about you? So it's a great introduction to the gospel. But where are we from? Well, I'm from born in Bolivia. My parents are still serving the Lord down there. My wife's parents were serving in Mexico. Now they're in Spain. So both of us are what they call MKs, mixed up kids, missionary kids. And we have just enjoyed serving the Lord overseas. We were serving in southeastern Turkey for a good dozen years over near Syria and Iran, down in the corner of Turkey. It's kind of a troubled area, a lot of Kurdish people living there. It's a very old city. So if you walk in, you can see these ancient city walls, and most of them are still intact. You can get up and walk around the whole city. It's about 5 kilometers around. It's really beautiful. So we were there for a good while. Our work was mainly with the local Diyarbakir church that when we got there had just finished building this building. And because of this, got a lot of traffic, people coming and going. And our desire was really to raise up a good crop of believers that would carry on the work, and that has happened over the years. This is one of the most recent pictures that they sent me. Of course, now the guys that we discipled are having their babies and kids, and the church keeps multiplying, so it's a real joy. Our greatest desire was to see then this multiply and see the church reach out to other areas. And so about the time that we left in 2013, we were able to commend our own local missionaries to another town, Ender and Rojda. And they went to this old town in Mardin, which is just on the border with Syria. And years ago, I had found this old church. It's a church from the 1850s. Okay, some of the first missionaries that went to the Middle East from the American Board of Commissioners for Foreign Missions, kind of a long name, they went there and were reaching out and establishing a work. They bought up this basement, and it's right on the main avenue. And when they showed it to me years ago, it was just filled with dust, you know, books and atlases and commentaries from the 1800s, just lying in a pile, an old organ that had probably been carted in on a mule's back. Everything was kind of decaying and falling apart. Well, and Ender took it upon himself to get the proper permissions and then begin to restore this building, which you can see it here in its full form. So good things happening now as the church is multiplying. But after 12 years in Diyarbakir in Turkey, I was forced to leave Turkey. The government was not happy that we were reaching out, sharing the gospel, so they tried this slander thing where they called me a threat to national security, and I was banned from entering the country. But we were allowed to go to northern Cyprus, which is also Turkish, and continue to minister to people there. In the ensuing years, the last 4 years, have been pretty tough for Turkey. If you follow international news, Turkey has had more of the limelight than usual. Turkey's generally considered, or was considered, the only real democratic secular friend of the West in the Middle East, but that's changed very recently, and now it's just become a very belligerent state. And this is partly because our president is one who would really like to see the country go back to its Islamic roots, and he's been doing this very effectively. And of course, there's a bit of a response to this and the more secular people in the country, and this took the form of a coup last year in July 15. So we had this big coup attempt, but it ended overnight. And the next morning, the government produced this great long document of names of people they wanted arrested and executed. Now, this caused a lot of people to think that maybe the government either knew this was going to happen all along and was ready for it because they handled it very quickly and very efficiently, or maybe they orchestrated it themselves. But the net result is it turned into a counter coup in which the government has only used this to rein in more power, and they've started out this witch hunt in which they're just jailing anybody and anybody that they think had any hand against them. So it's just been an opportunity for them to clean house. About 50,000 people are in jail right now in Turkey for any reason whatsoever related to the coup. Some of the sad repercussions of this is how it's affected believers. A good friend of ours, Pastor Andrew Brumson, who was serving in the one of the churches in Izmir, he's an American citizen, a good friend of ours, we went to his church and we were learning Turkish in Izmir, and he got called into the police, went with his wife, just thought it was routine. Well, they arrested him. So he figured he was going to get deported, much like I was and others that have been deported in the last few years. But instead, they hung on to him. And then they let go of his wife, but they kept hanging on to him. They just didn't deport him. Pretty soon, they came up with these trumped-up charges that he was aiding and abetting terrorism. How do you do that if you're a pastor? Well, they list the different things, and they've changed the charges many times. But what it really comes down to is the person that Turkey holds responsible for the coup is this old retired cleric that was exiled from Turkey years ago and has been living in Pennsylvania. And they've asked the American government to cough him up, and they won't do it without any real bona fide charges against them. And so basically Turkey has taken a pastor and held him hostage. And that's what they're doing. He's a political prisoner. And there have been attempts even all the way up from President Trump to get him freed, and it hasn't helped. So he continues to be charged as a terrorist and held against his will, and his family can only see him. His wife can only see him once a week. He's in an eight-person cell with 18 other people who are all Islamists. It's very difficult. So you might pray for Pastor Andrew. Of course, this has put a lot of the workers in Turkey on edge. Turkey is a very different country than it was years ago when we were living there. In the meantime, the Lord opened a new door for us in Cyprus, where we've been serving. The northern part of Cyprus is basically Turkish. You can see kind of line running through there, the UN buffer zone. The southern part is Republic of Cyprus proper. We're on the eastern edge, very near to the city of Salamis, where Paul and Barnabas first took steps in their first missionary journey. So the city we live in is called Magusa. It's a very small city. In many ways, it reminds us of Yakima, which we like this small town feeling, but 60, 70,000 people. But it's also a walled-in city with an old moat that goes around it and these old churches that are leftovers from the Crusades. This is where the Crusaders holed up after they got expelled from Palestine. So it has a lot of ancient buildings and churches. When people think of Cyprus generally, frankly, before we even moved there, we didn't know much about it. We've been there maybe once. And usually you think of it as a tourist island, and it is. A lot of hotels, a lot of beautiful beaches and places to see. It's not very big. You can drive from one end of the island to the other in about an hour and a half, 2 hours. So it's not huge. The other big thing that people know about Cyprus is that it's a place where there's a lot of dark things happening. And so a lot of prostitution, a lot of casinos, all kinds of these kind of things. And sadly, it's kind of become Turkey's backyard. The kind of things that they are outlawing in Turkey for moral reasons, they allow in northern Cyprus, which is considered autonomous, but is really a puppet state of Turkey. So there's 50 or more of these casinos and strip clubs all over the north of Cyprus, and they're everywhere. They're very prominent. It's the way they make their money. And since it's a quasi-legal state, they can get away with whatever they want, a lot of money laundering and all that. Not that you want to know that. But at any rate, another big cash cow for Cyprus is that they can draw in a lot of students and educate them in English. A lot of Turkish Cypriots have been educated in England. There's more Turkish Cypriots living in London than in all the island of Cyprus. And so many have come back and established universities because after the Arab Spring, when so many universities shut down across the Middle East, students were looking for an outlet and a way to get on into Europe and elsewhere. And so Cyprus has all of a sudden built up all these universities. I think last I counted about 24 universities. And that's just in that small piece of real estate in the north, which only has about 400,000 people living there. okay? 24 universities for that area. And they draw in people from all over the Middle East, Africa, very little from Europe, a lot from East Asia. This has given us a great opportunity to interact with people from all over the region that we wouldn't otherwise have. So it's a mission field all by itself. We had no idea about this until some of them wanted to start studying the Bible when we first got there. So we opened our home on Saturday evenings, began to study the Bible regularly, and that group grew. So every Saturday, this is our home, very packed tight with students, and they're from, you know, a lot of Iranians. They're particularly keen on learning the gospel. They haven't had that opportunity. A lot of guy here from Urumqi, which is China, the Turkish-speaking part of China, the Uyghurs up there. You have others from Africa, China, Iraq, a whole list there of people. And we've had the opportunity to disciple some of these, lead them to Christ, baptize them. This gal, Maryam, was a very stout, staunch atheist when we first met her, but the Lord worked in her heart. She was baptized, and now she's off studying in Belgium. Another fellow that I had a chance to disciple and baptize was Reza from Iran. And again, he's a PhD student of mechanical engineering, very bright, not wanting to go back to Iran, naturally, now that he's a believer. But he's just such a stalwart in his faith. It's such a joy to see many of these come to the Lord and growing in faith. Our real desire, though, was to see a local Turkish fellowship grow as well. So we began to meet early on with those that were around, that we knew. It quickly became a very eclectic group, anybody who knew Turkish who wanted to come together. So we have people in our group that are Korean background, Chinese, Uyghur, Iranian, Kyrgyz, and Kazakh, and all these other things, and a few Turkish Cypriots that have joined us as well. And the group has grown in the last few years. We rented an apartment this last November that we use as our church building. It's nothing like this, but it's the first floor in a building, and I use it as my office, my wife for her counseling, which she will describe to you more in detail in a couple weeks. But we have this big balcony that's about half the size of our sanctuary here, just empty. So I built the roof over that, and so we have a ping pong table out there. And so we've maximizing our space and using that for worship every Sunday. So we will get together with about 20, 30 people, have our little worship time together and teaching and breaking of bread. We had the opportunity to celebrate Easter together, and we called on the believers from the other cities to join us. And so we had about 130 people come together for this Easter celebration. You can see some of those from our group here. One of the real joys is that we've been joined by a family, Ryan and Ness and their four kids. He was also expelled from Turkey for similar things. And I told him, well, come on over to Exile Island and join us. And so he's the real mover and shaker, real entrepreneur as well. Very well-versed in Turkish and in the, you know, ministry and discipleship. So we really fit hand in glove, and they've been supporting the work in a great way. And so we have co-workers now the Lord brought over for us, and they're taking care of the fellowship in our absence. Some of their kids are the age of our kids, which is also a blessing. We had the joy of baptizing several of them just this last 2 months ago. So you can see kind of the eclectic nature of our group here. There's the tall guy is a student from Turkey who became a believer. The shorter gal, Suna, is a Turkish Cypriot gal, one of the first in our group to come to the Lord as a Turkish Cypriot. And she's since led her fiancé to the Lord as well. And they're getting engaged, formally having this whole little ceremony today. It probably already happened. Or maybe it's happening right now. And they'll be getting married in a couple months. So that'll be a new start for them. And then Tirza, our daughter, got baptized, as did Ryan's daughter, Alev. And then a lady from Moldova, who came over to work in the casino years ago and married a Turkish Cypriot and then met us, and has really, her faith has been rejuvenated, and we're trying to share with her husband as well. So this is kind of the nature of the work in Cyprus, very cosmopolitan, but also opportunities among the Turkish Cypriots. But that was always our longing and our prayer was, Lord, we want more Turkish Cypriots to come to know Christ. You know, the whole of the island, when we went there about 4 years ago, I only knew of four or five Turkish Cypriot believers. But as I said, for Easter, we had a whole crowd. And part of that was with the group that we met just about a year ago in September in the capital, Lefkosha. There's kind of an interesting story. It's almost like a Cornelius and Peter story, because I get called up from a lady from Oklahoma. And she said, are you Can Nuroğlu, which is my Turkish name. I do programs and such. And I said, yes. She said, well, I've been watching your programs for years. do you live in Cyprus? And I said, well, yeah. She said, well, I'm Cypriot, and I have a lot of relatives that have recently come to know the Lord. I've been sharing with them. Would you mind contacting them? I said, I'd be delighted to talk to them. So she gave me an address, and I went to this pharmacy. And this lady who was there, and she looks at me like she's looking at a ghost. I'm afraid she's going to fall down and start kissing my feet, you know, kind of like a Peter and Cornelius. And turns out she'd been watching my program for months and watching me on the internet and never imagined I would show up in her pharmacy. Well, for us, it was just as much of a surprise because she soon introduced us to the rest of her group and friends. She had already been sharing the gospel with about 30 people. And about 15 or 20 of them gathered together in a room and asked me to come and teach. And just a ready-made church. And these are all Turkish Cypriots, pharmacists, doctors, other professionals, all hungry for God's word. So we began to meet with them every other Friday, to study through the book of John. It's just been a delight to watch them grow. And now we've gotten them more in touch with other believers in the city. But that's just been something coming out of the woodwork, just a huge surprise. And they joined us also for the Easter celebration. You can see Eda on the far right, who is the pharmacist lady, just an incredible evangelist. We call her the Lydia of Cyprus. She's just so powerful with the gospel. Her husband is now a believer on the left side with their son, and then some of her sisters there and other people that she's contacted, that we've contacted. And there's a group now forming of believers there in the capital. So good things happening in Cyprus. One of the things that we really had on our heart when we went to Cyprus was thinking this could be a real hub for discipleship. And so we began to gather together contacts that we have and bring them together once a year for a 2-week-long intensive discipleship program. So we've done this for 3 years now, and we're going to be doing it in September in a couple weeks again. And so what this means is we're trying to bring people together. Say you're a believer in Egypt or a believer in Iran. You can't even go to church. Okay, how are you going to be discipled? You may really know the Lord and have his word and read it secretly, but there is no chance you're going to go to Bible college in Emmaus, right? And so what do we do? Well, you can come to Cyprus because Cyprus is central and it's close and you can go on a little vacation. So they come to Cyprus for a 2-week vacation in which they take advantage of this time to grow deep in God's word. So we are having people this year, already about 12, two guys from Egypt, one of them is from Saudi Arabia, another from Jordan, a gal from Jordan, somebody from Iraq, 3 from Iran, 3 from Turkey, and we may even have one from Morocco. So these are closed countries, and we can bring them into Cyprus like Jesus brought his disciples away to really build deep roots in them and then send them back. So they also get a chance to meet each other and know of believers in other countries and some of the challenges that they're facing and empathize with one another and get a greater vision. So this is what we're going to be doing in September. Two very lovely brothers that are helping us in this effort is Mike, who's a Jewish American married to a Turkish Armenian woman, and their children are very confused. But then we have Homer, who is born in Israel but has been serving the Arabs all these years in Lebanon. So they come and teach as well. So we have all these different angles, if you will, and we share the teaching together. We have incredible times of worship, praying for one another. This is, for them, it's a novel experience to meet believers from other places. Some are baptized there because that's their first chance to be doing such a thing. We go from Genesis to Revelation in 2 weeks, just give them an overview of all that the Bible teaches and launch them back out as disciples of Jesus. So this is one effort that we're pursuing, and the people that come to know the Lord and we disciple in our city, usually 3 or 4 of that crop every year come to the school, and that's their grand finale as they graduate and go on somewhere else. In many ways, it's been a joy to have this rotation of new people all the time because it's always fresh energy. One of the things that I've been doing also is going to other cities, other places where there's need for discipleship and teaching. One of those is Bulgaria. Turns out that there's a big minority of Turks living in Bulgaria, left over from the Ottoman Empire. And after the Cold War, many of them came to know the Lord. So they had all these great fellowships going on there and came to find out that there are more Turkish believers, Turkish-speaking believers in this minority in Bulgaria than there are in the whole country of Turkey. But there's only a handful of missionaries serving them, which has meant that they've had to improvise, and that's been good for them. But many of them, when I went to teach at a conference, recognized me from my television programs, which they've been watching. So they asked me to come back. So I've been going back twice a year, and been discipling them. One of the real unique things that I never did in Turkey was to preach in the open air, because in Bulgaria, it's part of the EU, you can do that. So they put up their microphone and their speakers and just blast away in the neighborhood. And so that was a real unique experience. Every time I go, they organize a little seminar, usually 70, 80 people gather together for 2 or 3 weeks. They're very poor, but very dedicated and committed to the Lord. So such a joy to build them up in their faith. Of course, besides that, I've traveled to other places as well. Many of you are familiar that I do write books in Turkish and in English as well. The Dear Muslim Friend book has now been a lot of places. I just finished writing a companion to this called Dear Agnostic, Dear Skeptic Friend, because I found that most of the people that we were dealing with coming to Cyprus are not Muslim anymore. They've been watching a lot of YouTube and Richard Dawkins and what all, and have just given themselves to agnosticism, figuring this is the way to be Western and modern. So we're having to counter a lot of that. In fact, I had that book already printed and translated and printed in Turkish, which just came out a couple months ago. So the book material and ministry continues to go on. Of course, as many of you know, I do TV programs with a Christian TV channel. Since I couldn't go to Turkey, they started to come to Cyprus to film me, which was a lot of fun. So this last year, we finished the series from Matthew to Revelation, doing every book of the Bible in this setting like this, and it was really fun. And then just in this last spring, we gathered together. They came over and they wanted to do a more dynamic program. And Cyprus is really lends itself well to this with all the scenery and everything. So we went out on the beaches, on the mountains, and they even filmed me on my motorcycle. So it was very interesting just going around the island, and they were just filming me for a lot of these programs that will come out soon. Thankfully now, though, I've been able to go back to Turkey since last summer. When my court cases were finally finished up. Of course, every time I go in, they remind me that I'm not welcome and that I can only stay as a tourist and that I will not be tolerated to stay there permanently. So still, it was nice to see fellow believers. I was invited to a conference that we started years ago. Now is being led up by people we disciple that are leading the youth, Ilyas and Ipek, who are actually living in our house back in Turkey. So we're just delighted for that. Just great to see them going on. And so we can look back now with a bit of perspective, realize that the leaving Turkey, as painful as it was then, was really the Lord's doing. It opened up all these opportunities in Cyprus, but it also helped the local church in Diyarbakir to rise to the occasion. They went through a bit of a dip, but now they've really grown strong, and the Lord is doing good things. This was the group of young people that gathered together in the southeast for this event. We were talking about spiritual warfare and battling for the Lord's sake, and had the opportunity to really pray over them in the end and prepare them for this battle ahead. The city we were in actually was Mardin, where Ender and Rojda work, and we got a chance to go in and see the building. And their work now is booming. And Ender was telling me that they get about, up until June, about 1,000 people a week coming to the church. These are people just knocking on the door, never been to a church, curious, want to see the inside of a church. And Ender takes the chance to share the gospel with them. So he said, I'm just having a hard time catching lunch break. You know, it's just so full all the time. And they've been praying for another family to join them. So this fall, Lord willing, we'll send a second family from our fellowship in Diyarbakir to support the work there in Mardin and build that fellowship up. Of course, now they all have kids, and kind of they're like grandkids for us, because they're the ones, children of those we've discipled, and it's such a joy to see them going on for the Lord. So really good things, wonderful things happening in Turkey as well as Cyprus. We were able to remain connected. Of course, there is the shadow of war and of all these things happening in Turkey. But the Lord is doing, despite all that, wonderful things. If anything, it's often in these times of turmoil that God really opens hearts and touches many lives. There are many more things that we're going to share, but I've left some of those for my wife to share at potluck in a couple weeks, so you'll get a chance to hear more. But if you just think of of the work that we're doing. You can continue to pray for the work in Cyprus, the church to be built up, and the new believers there to grow strong in their faith and reach out to their communities. Also for the ongoing work in Turkey, in Diyarbakir, across the country. Good things are happening. I didn't mention the refugee ministry because my wife will talk about that. But do pray for us as the family, our marriage. We recognize more and more that we really are on the crosshairs. And there's often time we see that the enemy is really attacking us and in different ways challenging our commitment to him, to Christ. And so our children as well, they've adapted better now to Turkey, but there's always challenges. Sorry to Cyprus, but education has been challenging. So this coming fall, they're going to start a new school, which means that they're going to have to take a one-hour bus to another country, to the south of the island, go through the border, and come back every day. So an hour there, an hour back, every day to school will be a bit of a challenge. We pray that that works out for them. So let us cap it there so we can have our coffee break and get all charged up for the message afterwards. If you have questions, we're going to be around for about 2 weeks, and we'd love to connect with different ones of you that are here. Just we enjoy those opportunities, so please come and let us know. We're staying with Pat and Peggy. And later this afternoon, I'm going to be headed to Shiloh to leave our daughter off. But if anybody really has a lot to talk about, you're welcome to join me. Thank you.